everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend John, engineering and producing our program. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster radio program for this Monday, August 19th, 2024. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We'll begin our 15th year with the radio program in January. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. And the Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today's one-on-one interview originally aired on June 24th. We believe it's worth a second visit. On Monday, we do something we call the Monday One-on-One, presented by our friends at Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors. Got a couple of them in our home at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Beautiful work that they do at Moe's. Of course, Moe's a fantastic photographer, so they're selling his work at the gallery, and where they really excel, picture framing. And if you don't want to put the piece up on the wall yourself, call Moe. He'll make house calls, make sure it goes up just the way you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and they're right next to Copenhagen. And Monsoon Chocolate is now in that little shopping center there, Midtown Shopping Center. They also have a great website, moesgallery.com. Our Monday one-on-one guest this week is Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Arizona, where she studies what happens in our brains when we experience grief. She's the author of the best-selling book, The Grieving Brain, which explores what scientists know about how our minds grapple with the loss of a loved one. Mary Frances, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Tell me a little bit about what happens, generally speaking, to our brains when we are in the midst of a grief.
When we lose a loved one, you don't think of it this way, but we have to update our understanding of everything about our world. Our loved one, if it was someone we lived with, if it was someone who supported us, they're wrapped into every experience we have through the day. You think of how many times, you know, you might text a loved one or reach out to talk to someone. And it means that the brain now has to predict their absence instead of their presence. And that's actually remarkably difficult to do.
I have been so transparent, and I'm glad I have been, about what Anne went through, being diagnosed a year ago, a couple of weeks ago, getting the news that she was going to die. She had a terminal cancer, an inoperable cancer. So my grief is at about one year. She lived for 10 more weeks and then died August 17th. But I've been in the midst of building a new person. Mm-hmm. And when Anne died, or even before that, because I knew she was going to die, I felt, Mary Frances, half of me was dying.
Mm-hmm. And that probably is a lot the way the brain represents our relationships. So interesting, the brain, of course, has this understanding of me, myself, you know. It also, of course, has an understanding. It encodes the people in our lives. But it seems that when we are closely attached to someone, the brain actually represents we, the mm-hmm, us, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when that loved one dies, the brain has to figure out, where is part of us? Mm-hmm. Where is that part of me? And many people describe it feels like a piece of me is missing, mm-hmm. possibly because that is in part how the brain understands our relationships.
Yeah, because we often refer to our spouses, Mary Frances, as our better half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already ingrained in the brain that there's another half out there.
Yes.
And so how does the chronology work then? How do you rebuild the shattered pieces? How does the brain go about doing that?
Well, fortunately,
and it doesn't. I would assume, at least from my own experience, this isn't going to happen overnight.
This is not going to happen overnight. You know, I think it's interesting to think of grieving as a form of learning. We have to understand the person is gone, and we also have to understand how to live our life now, and both of those are learning processes. Fortunately, the brain is there to help us learn. So the brain does understand how to take in the new information. Oh gosh, when I pick up the phone, they're not at the other end. And by picking out new pieces of information over and over and over again, it will learn. So what's interesting is it's not so much that time heals, although it takes time, but experience heals. So new experiences that unfold over time. And that means that we have to allow ourselves to have new experiences that include the fact that our loved one is gone.
It's a building process. And I've heard in my journey over and over again from grief professionals who say, Bill, let the grief wash over you. Because every time that little, if it's a tidal wave or even gets to kind of little wave, it is a learning experience. And I guess when we're talking about the brain is rewiring when that's happening.
That's exactly right. People don't necessarily know this, but grief almost always comes in waves. In one way, that's how it's different from depression, which is sort of ever present. But
yes,
grief actually comes in waves. People will sometimes be afraid to let themselves cry, but because they'll think, well, I'll never stop crying. But that's mm-hmm. just not how grief works.
Mm-hmm.
It does come in waves. And that is probably enabling our brain to re-understand the world around us that does have this painful aspect to it, but also has so many other aspects to it that the brain learns to balance both the grief and the joy we can find in life.
And this is not something that you're just... This is documented. From tell our listeners a little bit about how you are able to determine these things, Mary Frances O'Connor.
So the very first neuroimaging study of grief was done here at the University of Arizona and published in 2003. And so in that study, we had grieving people who are bereaved, bring us a photograph of the person who had died. And then we matched that photograph with a picture of a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were lying in the neuroimaging scanner, in that MRI scanner, we showed them photographs, the photo of the person they'd brought that had died, and compared that to the brain activity that's happening when you look at a stranger. So we weren't interested in just how does the brain react to a person, but how does the brain react to this person that you're grieving for? And so we're actually able to see what regions of the brain are activated and how do the patterns of activation change across that scan, which helps us to understand a little bit more about how it works mechanically in the brain. I think many people find it validating to know there is a mechanical process,
yes,
a physiological process,
yes,
going on.
And there are health implications that I want to get into too, and we might get into that after we take the break. But you did some research that when about blood pressure, this is really interesting, that when the person grieving would be talking about their loss, there was a noticeable change in their blood pressure. And from a personal point of view, I find this not surprising at all, Mary
mm-hmm.
Frances.
Mm-hmm.
But this happens.
Yes, absolutely. So we knew before we did this study here in the psychology department, from previous research, we knew that sort of your average 24-hour blood pressure goes up in the first 6 months after a death. And that, of course, has health implications for people. But we were curious, well, is it the same across all 24 hours? Or is it that during those waves of grief, we see the greatest increase? If it's sort of a wave of grief for your body as well as your mind,
yes,
and your heart. And so we had people tell us about a recent grief experience they'd had, and we were measuring their blood pressure at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
What's fascinating is we saw that the people who came in with the most severe grief had the greatest rise in their blood pressure.
The spike.
Yes, the spike that happened during that grief experience. This gives us an inkling that we might be able to predict or maybe discover the people who are at highest risk for some of the heart health problems.
Because there are dangers, you know. I mean, we can't sugarcoat this, that this is proven that in the first, I don't know, 3 to 6 months, there is a real critical area here. I think they've called it like a widower's syndrome or whatever it is. There are some serious implications to the health that you have to be very careful about.
That's exactly right. You know, we say dying of a broken heart,
yes,
but that is actually a real thing.
It is.
And what we know from very large studies, studies in Finland of a million people, that the risk of dying of a heart attack goes up in that first 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in men, in both men and women,
yes,
but in men in particular. And so much so that we can now comfortably say, not comfortably, but I mean reliably say,
yes,
that if a man's wife dies in that first 3 to 6 months, well, in that first 6 months, his chance of having a fatal heart attack himself is almost twice as high as a married man during that same period of time.
Yeah.
That's an incredible risk factor.
It is.
Twice.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The good news is that for those that do survive, and that a lot of the health systems start to go back to more of the baseline before the grief, and I want to get this correct, in that 1 year to 18-month period. Is that about right?
You know, I will say there's wide variability,
sure,
right?
Generally.
Yeah.
Things.
So when we look at across all people, mm-hmm, we actually even see starting to return to baseline in 6 months,
okay,
for the physiology.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't mean anyone is done grieving at 6 months.
No.
But if you think of your body as sort of like a rubber ball that gets squished, mm-hmm, right, in that early period of grieving, it starts to expand, as you said, mm-hmm, sort of physically, maybe before even emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is that our systems start to re-regulate. Our mm-hmm brain understands, oh, I'm not going to see them every time I wake up in the morning, and I have to figure out how to grocery shop without them and all those things. And so our physiology starts to re-regulate, and then that helps us, I believe, to emotionally re-regulate.
Yeah, good point. All right. Mary Frances O'Connor, our Monday one-on-one guest, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Moe'sGallery.com is their website. More with Mary Frances O'Connor from the University of Arizona right after this. And by the way, she is the author of The Grieving Brain, which is a very critically acclaimed book. And the new book will be titled?
So in the spring of 2025, there will be a new book called mm-hmm The Grieving Body.
Grieving Body. Look forward to that one. All right. Be right back with Mary Frances O'Connor.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Monday one-on-one fascinating conversation today with Mary Frances O'Connor, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of Arizona, where she studies what happens in our brains when we experience grief. She's the author of The Grieving Brain, which explores what scientists know about how our minds grapple with the loss of a loved one. Our Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Mary Frances, getting back to the health aspects, there's also something that's called kind of like a brain fog. The brain is working overtime, so it's only natural sometimes that the brain's trying to sort some things out, and we may forget not only where the keys are, but, gee, did I write that check already?
Mm-hmm. That's right. The brain fog that happens during grieving is a real thing. What's interesting is that it happens a little bit differently for different people. So as you say, people find it in different areas. Some people can't remember something, or some people can't concentrate as they're trying to do their taxes or something. So what's notable about this is, for the most part, it's what we would call it's a functional issue, meaning the brain seems to be doing a lot of work to understand how things work now. And it's almost like your computer is doing a bunch of updating in the background, which makes it hard to, you know, write a Word document or something. But fortunately, for the most part, that's not a structural problem. You haven't had an insult to the brain that you will never overcome. Mm-hmm. Most people find that those changes in their concentration are reduced over time. They get back to feeling more their normal self. Of course, if one is experiencing that for a long period, you know, say more than a year, of course that's always worth getting checked out. But for the most part, it's sort of a functional problem where our brain is doing something else.
And you should keep up with all your doctor appointments. Some people would say, well, oh, I just don't even want to deal with it right now. But just go ahead with, you know, if you're supposed to see the dentist in 6 months, or if you're going, used to go every 4 months, don't suddenly wait a year.
That's right. I mean, it's a risky
period. Your heart doctor.
That's right. That's right. We know that this is a riskier period for your health, so it's time to get your annual checkup.
Sure.
And many people who've been caring for a loved one who's died, they've kind of put off all their own medical care, right?
Definitely.
Have you been for your mammogram? Have you been to your dentist?
Yes.
Now is the time to go so that any problems that might be emerging, they can treat right now.
One area I'm fascinated by, and I want to hear your input on it, men die normally. Seven out of 10 men specifically will die before the wife. How do men handle this grief, loss of a spouse, differently than a woman would, a widow?
Yeah, we find that
there are differences.
There are differences, and some of those also have what we would call cohort effects, meaning that men who were raised in, say, your generation, Bill, mm-hmm. might react differently than men raised today mm-hmm. or raised in my generation.
Okay.
So what we can see is that in many couples, women are in charge of the socializing. They keep the social calendar. Mm-hmm. They reach out for birthdays
yes.
and all that. And when that person is gone, men suddenly have to develop the skill mm-hmm. of reaching out to friends, of mm-hmm. planning what I'm going to do this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know loneliness is mm-hmm. a real problem for mm-hmm. widowers.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that women are often also the keeper of the health behaviors.
Yes.
So they're the ones that make sure there's salad with dinner.
Yeah.
They're the ones that make sure the doctor appointments are made. And so here again, widowers really have to take on these skills.
Become a manager for your home.
That's it. Exactly.
I mean, the grocery shopping.
Yep.
The property, who's going to take care of the pool or
that's
this,
right.
or what about this,
yes.
this issues outside. It's a whole new way of looking at things.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that is there any advice that you would like to give some of our listeners about the way they should be handling it? Or is there no real template for handling this?
I think it's important to recognize that each person grieves differently because every relationship is different, right? So I think of it, you know, many people will remember the 5 stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came out with those in 1969. Well, you think how far science has come since 1969.
Yeah.
What we know is that she was right in the sense that grief does involve a lot of different feelings, right? Grief can look like anger. Grief mm-hmm. can look like anxiety. But we know that people do not go through those as stages. They don't go through them in one order.
Yeah, personally, I have found those not helpful.
Exactly.
I'll just be
yep.
very candid about this
yep.
because the 5 stages indicate, well, okay, when I get to number 5, I'm totally great. Everything's
that's right.
fine.
And that's not but really how
five
it experiences.
Is basically could be a commingling
yes.
from day one.
That's right. So what we know from much bigger scientific studies now, where we follow the same person for many, many months, is that overall that acceptance tends to rise and yearning tends to decrease. But it's a lot like the stock market. It may always be going in the right direction, but
yes.
there's a lot of ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually very, very normal.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a down, you may think, gosh, I'm not any better than I was 6 months ago.
Because as human beings, we want to fix stuff.
We really do. We really do.
And
this is something that you'll find, I know we've talked about this, mm-hmm. Bill, friends often want to fix it for us.
They do. And
yeah.
what should people say to someone that's grieving?
I think this is such an interesting question. There really is no one phrase that you can say. Many people will know Jeanette Murray that started Ben's Bells here
yes.
in Tucson. And she says we should use the platinum rule. Instead of do unto others as you would have done to you,
mm-hmm.
we should do unto others as they would want. So it's really about being with that person in whatever they need.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps what they need is just someone to come and spend some time with them
mm-hmm.
and not talk about what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Another person needs a shoulder to cry on.
Mm-hmm.
But in no case is it our job as a friend or a supporter. We're not there to cheer them up,
no.
right? There's nothing that's
They're
willing
not,
to...
We're not, you know, these people are not cheerleaders.
They're right? not. And it can make a really, a sense of isolation if the other person is kind of expecting you to feel better when that's not really going to happen right in the moment.
All right, Mary Frances O'Connor, the book The Grieving Brain is available everywhere, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the book is... It came out in 2022. Mm-hmm. It's done very well. And tell our listeners briefly about what the new book will be exploring.
Mm. The new book, so one hat I wear is mm-hmm. neuroscience, and that's doing those neuroimaging studies. Mm-hmm. Of course, all of it is psychology, understanding how the mind and the emotions work. But I have for a long time studied the heart and the immune system and how those respond to grieving. And so the new book will talk more about that research mm-hmm. that I've done.
Interesting. Mary Frances, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, I think that interview is worth a second listen, so I wanted to play that with Mary Frances O'Connor, author of The Grieving Brain, which is a bestseller. All right, coming up next, we are back live. Ted Maxwell, General Maxwell, is with me in studio. We have a lot to unpack after the mid-show break. Want to talk about some new optimism with the RTA plan, General, and then we'll talk a little bit about all the ballot initiatives.
No, we've got a lot. The RTAs, I've always been pretty optimistic as we're moving that way, but the ballot initiatives, that list hasn't gotten any smaller.
Are we talking 13?
13 right
oh,
now.
Oh, boy.
One
all right. Take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Monday.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk a little bit about, well, we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, the folks over at Green Things, I love the owners, Jan and Jack. They do such a great job, very hands-on owners, and they're very happy with it's been a very robust, at times perhaps a little damaging in some areas, but we've gotten some good rain, and everything's looking green over at Green Things. Green Things located conveniently over by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. Sister business is Zocalo Village, wonderful pottery, much of it from Mexico, but there are items there from really all over the world. Jan and Jack do a great job when they do their buying trips. They are open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Always a pleasure to welcome General Ted Maxwell back to the show. General Maxwell is the head of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, where he's the president and CEO. He's been there since 2018. His newest venture is right here. He's now become very comfortable, not that he wasn't before, behind a microphone. He's the host of the Tuesday edition of Jump in Tucson. General Maxwell put in nearly 34 years of military service, including 15 years in active duty with the Air Force, additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard, retired as a major general in 2018. His final military, that's three stars, the major general?
No, Bill, you always try to promote me.
Because I have General Buchanan,
right,
one of our regulars, Jeff, Army, he's a three star.
He's a lieutenant general.
And I always get this screwed up. Lieutenant general in the Army's three stars, major in the Air Force is two.
Correct. And actually, major general in the Army is also two.
Okay.
It confuses people because
it is.
lieutenant is earlier in rank than major.
Yeah.
But when you get to the general officer, major comes before lieutenant general.
All right.
So, I'm a very proud, lucky two star.
Yeah, he's got two stars, and his final military position was commander, Arizona Air National Guard. 2021, then Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. So he's on the ADOT board, and then he's on the 9-member regional, because you are on the ADOT board, makes you a member of the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors, which is, of course, currently crafting what hopefully will be an RTA next plan. And that's where I want to, first of all, good to see you as always.
Good to see you, Bill.
Your show's going well.
I'm enjoying it.
It's
easy when you just get really bright people on the radio and you could just ask a question and they talk.
Yeah, they talk.
It works really good.
Yeah, we want good talkers.
Absolutely.
When we do radio programs. All right. I do want to talk about there is a new sense of enthusiasm, optimism, let's put it that way, among those I've talked with on the council, namely Councilman Cunningham, who actually is going to be on this program again on Thursday. And then we've got Vice Mayor Kevin Dahl will be our Friday focus interview on Friday. So we'll be hearing more about this. But where are we with the plan? And I do want a listener at a good point. When Mayor Honey was on the show a couple of weeks ago, he was saying the way Marana is growing, that I got the feeling, and so did this listener, that the town really didn't need to be a part of a regional transportation plan.
Well, Bill, we've heard from many of the mayors that say when they look at the plan, unless there's some regionalism in it, and it also addresses the issues the towns and municipalities need, they might be better off to go their own half cent. And you know what? I could probably make that argument. There's some potential for that as well. The difference is then nothing will be done with a regional approach. If the city of Tucson was to get a half cent, it's going to be the Move Tucson program, and it's going to be flying. But there's still a need to get the people that live in the different municipalities, including Marana, to come into the city of Tucson. Right now, the city of Tucson is the hub for majority of activities.
It's
for most
the center
business.
Of
it's
influence,
the center
as they
of,
say.
Of Pima County.
Yes.
And it's that way. The thing that keeps us with a regional approach, the only thing that I've seen doing it recently, has been activities out of PAG and RTA. And the RTA is the best example of our regional approach.
PAG being the regional...
Association of Governments.
Right.
Pima
right.
Association of Governments.
Pima Association.
And effectively the same boards, just different missions. The RTA board specifically manages the plan and the half-cent sales tax. That comes along with it. For organizations or companies that are looking at relocating here, they look to see what kind of regional approach you have. They don't want to walk into an area and bring their some of their current employees and try to encourage more people to stay here, work here, live here, if all the municipalities aren't getting along. And the biggest factor of my concern, if every municipality was going to try to do a half cent sales tax on themselves, and we'll talk about Marana specifically, is that opportunity doesn't exist for 36% of our population in Pima County. Because 36%...
including myself, who live in unincorporated Pima County.
And so there are projects that the leverage that you get from the half-cent sales tax through the RTA bring in so many additional dollars coming to the region. Projects like the Cotero Farms TI, the interchange on I-10. Ina, the continuation of that road. Those are two really regional-focused roads. If Marana was to have a half-cent sales tax, would they do either one of those? I'm not sure. You know, it then becomes a different conversation versus the regional approach to getting around this town and getting around this town in good quality roads.
When a site selector, these are the economic development people who would come to Tucson thinking about bringing a business here, hopefully it would be a large business. And one of the top three criteria is regionalism. They want to see, is everybody on the same page? If this RTA plan didn't even get to the point where it went to the public for even input, but if it was killed even before that point, what does that tell you? What would a site selector say to his or her board?
They're going to go back and go, we're investing in a region that's dangerous. It's not a positive thing. I mean, it doesn't look good from our community or from the standpoint of trying to grow and develop, because many, if not most of us, work in side of Tucson. Many of us come down to Tucson for both entertainment, anything surrounding the athletics of the U of A. We've got all these things, but there's a lot of businesses that rely on our roadways to connect Vail to Marana, Oro Valley, Sarita, all those to the city of Tucson. They all connect. And if we don't take care of the roads, which is the spine of the economy and the quality of life, we're going to face challenges. Now, I am positive that we've been moving in the right direction. There's a lot of things coming along. All the mayors and all the people representing their municipalities have been pretty vocal about what they want. But I think we've all got to recognize that no one of us is going to get everything we want.
Right.
But we're all going to get something we want and something that's good for the region.
So there needs to be a blueprint that is given to the public.
And that's to your point. This is not the vote we're trying to do now is to move a plan to the public for input. There are things on that plan that I guarantee something everybody doesn't like, you know, from different municipality perspectives. But that doesn't mean that we can't put this forward and let the community have their input. Because when we get ready to send something to the Board of Supervisors, who then place it on the ballot, at that point, we need to know that we let the voters, let the citizens have some input for probably somewhere between 4 and 5 months before we do this. And if we're going to try to still get to the ballot in May, which gives us a year before the RTA expires, then we need to start doing that here pretty mm-hmm. soon. And I do believe that there's been enough changes. You heard Council mm-hmm. Member Cunningham talked about he likes what he sees. I think two boards ago, we didn't have our last board meeting because we lacked a quorum. But two boards ago, when I proposed some of the ideas that we're going to incorporate in this new plan, everybody had a positive, okay, this is moving. I could see this, but bottom line is we haven't had the discussion yet. And hopefully mm-hmm. in September, we're trying to schedule a special board meeting and then have our normal board meeting. It will give us an opportunity to look at what I hope is a plan that we can get out to the voters for their input, because ultimately they're the ones that have to approve this.
And generally, what is making the city feel more optimistic?
There's a couple things. The RTA board voted unanimously to use the pessimistic economic forecast as our baseline, our number mm-hmm. for what we're going to plan on.
Okay, the pessimistic one. That would be the low end.
That's
one.
The low end.
Okay.
When George Hammond and
Dr.
the University of Arizona
economic forecaster at the UA. Okay.
When they give us the economic forecast, you get a pessimistic view, which basically means 20% of the time it's going to be down there.
Yeah.
You get an optimistic view, which in this case was almost $1 billion more over 20 years. Mm. But that's the 20% on the top side. Mm. And then you get the baseline, which is right in the middle. Last time we used the baseline. But we had the recession of 2008. Then we had COVID. Mm-hmm. So we fell short on our revenue projections. So this time the board wanted to make sure we aren't going to overestimate. By doing so now, the city of Tucson had stepped forward with Mike Ortega saying, listen, we'll take some of that risk. Our numbers aren't where we need them to be. If we take some of that risk between the pessimistic and the baseline, we'll use that. If we can get those dollars, we may be able to come along. We can get up to a percentage where we feel that we are getting our value mm-hmm. out of this. And what we've done in this plan that's going forward, it's incorporated a lot of that. And a lot of it's been in the sphere of the arterial rehabilitation, which is effectively taking
the road. Rehabilitation.
Absolutely. It's the roads between the curbs. So there's no design. There's no new modification. It's just taking roads that are really in bad shape now mm-hmm. and taking them down 2, 4, 6 inches and basically making them like new. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece of what's in there that wasn't in any of the past plans. So we'll see how the board of, the RTA board takes to it.
When is that meeting then?
Well, we're scheduled right now to have a meeting on September 5th, which is the
Labor
the
Day
special
week,
meeting.
The week.
It's the week after.
Okay,
yeah, it's the Thursday after.
Okay.
And then later in the month, I believe the last week of September, we have another RTA meeting scheduled. Now, the one on the 5th is only RTA. The one later in the month will be PAG and RTA. And the one on the 5th may be limited just to talk RTA next. Mm-hmm.
So if you could get something to the citizens, you'd have 4 or 5 months.
Exactly. And still have the opportunity then to take it to the board and have enough time to have campaigns, probably campaigns for, and there's going to be some people opposed. So we'll have campaigns before it goes to the voters, hopefully in May of 2025, because what that gives us is that gives us an opportunity to reassess if things don't turn out how we want them.
All right. For the second part of your interview, you're my ballot go-to guy, and this is so confusing. There's like, 13... perhaps items that will be on the ballot for the voters to choose yay or nay. But we will talk with General Maxwell about the ballot propositions right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and we have General Ted Maxwell with us, and we've been talking about the plan for the RTA next, but I want to transition as part of his job as CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He keeps a very close eye about what's going on with the legislature, and we've got the 2024 ballot propositions. And overall, General, what can you say about this group, which looks like it's going to be a baker's dozen of 13?
It does, Bill. So the one that did not achieve their signatures was the one fair wage, which was a minimum wage.
Minimum wage.
And the irony of it is one of the bills that are one of the propositions that will be on the ballot is one that was kind of created in response to that one, because the minimum wage was trying to eliminate the tipped worker credit, you know, which allows the employees of folks who receive tips to pay $3 below minimum wage as long as they guaranteed that their pay would be at least minimum wage. And in most cases with tip workers, it's significantly above minimum wage.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so that's where they go. But they do have a Prop 138 on the ballot, which is the Tipped Workers Protection Act, which changes a couple things for that tip worker credit. One, it allows them to take 25% of the minimum wage as a deleted wage scale. So it takes it down 25%, but it also guarantees that they're going to make at least $2 more. And again, because most tip workers make even more than that above it, but this would put it in the Constitution and would guarantee that any future attempt to change either minimum wage or anything to do with wages would not be able to take away that tipped worker credit that allows, let many of these restaurants to keep some of their costs more in line and yet still ensure that their employees are being paid well above minimum wage.
Okay. Certainly the marquee item will be the abortion.
It's really kind of ironic because the abortion access which will be what drives voters to the ballot. Mm-hmm. It will be the bill that
it really will.
Really drives voters to the ballot. It's Prop 139.
Okay.
And the irony is the Make Elections Fair folks, they knew that they wanted to make sure that people got down to their initiative on the ballot. You know, that's the open primaries ball. So they're Prop 140. So they were literally waiting so that when the abortion access folks dropped it, they dropped theirs right behind it, and then it'd be in a good spot on the ballot to get.
It's like a horse race.
Yes.
So when you want to get a good poll position.
Poll position. And the important thing, we could talk about each one of these 13 ballot propositions.
And I've asked you actually to do a full show about this when I am away in October.
And
you're going to do a full hour on this.
I will gladly come on and talk about them all in depth.
I think it's the 15th, but I'm not sure of October. But go ahead.
But what's most important, Bill, is to understand that there's 13 propositions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times folks get down there and they are tired of being in the ballot box and they'll just vote no on all of them.
Yeah.
I would ask, if you don't know what you're voting on, mm-hmm. don't vote no or don't vote yes.
Uh-huh.
Don't make
just
sure you understand what these ballot initiatives do. Now, there will be a small paragraph in the ballot that you have to read through to get an understanding. But this is a case of where doing your research beforehand. When you get your ballot in the mail, you'll get the ballot pamphlets that give you pros and con arguments. Just do a little research and really know when you show up on election day, mm-hmm. if you're going to vote in person, that you already know what your votes on these issues are going to be, because you're going to get tired. These propositions come at the end, just ahead of the local issues that may be on the ballot as well. And Maricopa, I think, is looking at a 3-page ballot this year.
Are they really?
Because of these 13, all their elections, and all the judges, because mm-hmm. the judges are still in there.
Another one that will get a lot of attention, the Border Security Act, that's Proposition 314.
That's absolutely true. 314 grew out of a House bill 2060, and it was a bill that the governor, I do believe, vetoed, and they brought it back. It was one that I was surprised survived the the court, the judicial system,
Federal authority that there's already.
The challenge is the federal authority wasn't what was hung it up in court recently. What hung it up in court recently was people challenging the one topic law.
Ah.
That is, these propositions are supposed to address a single mm-hmm. topic. Mm-hmm. But in that one, the Border Security Wall, it's not only in allowing state and local law enforcement to detain individuals that have crossed illegally or seen it on, either witnessed it or saw it on tape or have some other reason to assume they crossed illegally, basically not at the ports of entry. They crossed in between the ports. But it also requires businesses to use both the Save and E-Verify to check the legal status of employees, which is already a law, but and then it also increases the penalties for selling fentanyl that results in a death. So it's putting a lot of stuff into statute that some would say shouldn't be, and it's crossing, but it made it through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
The courts have said, because it's everything on this bill, this proposition deals with border security or lack thereof right now, aka that's how the fentanyl's getting through, it can all stand. So it's going to be one that's going to be very interesting. Now, something for the voters to know is it's modeled in some ways after, I believe it was State Bill 4. It's the law in Texas.
Oh.
That basically gave the Texas legal authority the same one that this one would encourage here. And in this proposition, it says it only becomes law in Arizona if the one in Texas stands up in court. Because it's currently going through the court system.
That will go to the Supreme Court.
Probably. It's going to, I would bet it ends at the Supreme Court.
All right. You'll take a real deep dive. We'll do a whole show on this in October. But Will Humble, the former Arizona State Health Director, he doesn't like this measure 135, which limits the governor proclaiming an emergency to only 30 days. Will thinks that's a little limiting.
It was an interesting one that I think came about purely because of what they saw during COVID.
Okay.
You know, they were very upset about it, and there was a lot of legislators that didn't want to. They thought the governor took too much time or prowess. So,
all right,
it does require. There's a lot of information there, Bill.
All right, General Maxwell, we'll listen to your shows on Tuesday at 9. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great day.